The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but
we have main engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston, broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome to the Friday Space Show. Thank you all for tuning in, and it is great to be here. So let's jump right into the program. For those of you who would like to call us, please write down the toll-free number, although I will announce it later in the show as well. 1-866-687-7223. Remember, there are no call screeners. Please let the phone ring until it's answered, and be patient. I'll bring you up on the air as quickly as possible. Also, I will hold you over on a break, so don't let an upcoming break stop you from using the telephone. Email is drspace@thespaceshow.com, thespaceshow@gmail.com, and dmlivings, with an S on the end of it, @yahoo.com. And chat is on the AOL, IM, ICQ, and CompuServe programs. The screen name is the same for all of those programs, lowercase, one word, space, show, chat. Please remember, we're copyrighted and trademarked, but you can download these shows, copy them, and distribute them for your own personal use. Please don't do anything commercial. No editing of the shows. No YouTube special networks or anything like that. But your ideas for creative use or different uses for the shows are always welcome. Let me hear from you at drspace@thespaceshow.com. And we podcast over at gigadial.net. We thank Andrew for doing the podcast for us. You'll find the RSS URL to subscribe to our podcast on our website, both of our newsletters. We're iTunes compatible, and we're in Podcast Alley, astrospacenow.com, and a host of other sites. If you have any questions about our podcast, please let us hear from you. And our website is thespaceshow.com, so please do visit it. Our comprehensive newsletter is there, either late Sunday evening or early Monday morning, California time. It has all of the details of the week's programs, the guest bios, and it has a future events section. And it's also where we announce changes to the program first and foremost. So if you want to stay current on what's happening with the Space Show, check the website newsletter from time to time. You can also subscribe to the very short email newsletter. It's just one or two lines about the week's programming. Send your request to drspace@thespaceshow.com. Everything we do is archived, and you can hear all of our shows going back to 2001 right off of our website, or you can easily download them. We have a store on our website. You'll see a button up at the top for Space Show gear. Check it out. Your suggestions are welcome, and I hope you find some items that are of interest to you, your family, friends, and associates. Above all, you'll see the Space Show support button. Remember, we're a 501c3 foundation with the One Giant Leap Foundation. We could not do this program without your support. We absolutely need your support to keep all the programs going and what we're doing. So we thank those of you who do make contributions to the Space Show, One Giant Leap Foundation, and we hope that others will do so as well. Remember, if you pay United States taxes, you do get a tax donation for contributing to this nonprofit. Remember also that the Space Show is brought to you in part by the Secure World Foundation, promoting cooperative solutions for space security. For more information, visit secureworldfoundation.org. As for the hold the dates, I'm only going to do one because that's what we're talking about today, and that is the SmallSat Conference in Logan, Utah, which is coming up pretty quickly. It's August 9th through the 12th. This is what we're going to be talking about today. Their website is smallsat.org. space.org. That's one word. And I'm really happy to bring back to the program, speaking to us about the conference, Dr. Pat Patterson. He's currently the Director of Technology Innovation Division within Utah State University's Space Dynamics Lab. And are you still the chairman of the SmallSat Conference, Pat? Because I haven't updated your bio in quite a while.
Yep, I am. I have a day job and a night job. My night job is essentially the chairman of the Small Satellite Conference. And then my typical day job is working for the Space Dynamics Lab. And that's changed just recently. I am now the director of the Strategic Military Space Division here at the Space Dynamics Lab.
I'll have to get a new bio from you before you're on next year. I'm also happy to introduce to everybody the new director of the Space Dynamics Lab, Neil Holt. Neil has been with the Space Dynamics Lab for 20 years. He became the organization's director on November 13th of 2009, and he leads a 340-employee team. Can you believe that SDL has that many people with it? It's headquartered in North Logan, Utah. But it has locations in many different states, which include Los Angeles, California, Houston, Texas, and our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. So, Neil, welcome to the Space Show. How are you today?
Great.
Thank you for joining us. And David is fine. Most of his first name basis on the show.
Okay.
Pat, start out and give us the 1, 2, 3 about the conference so we can get that down the road and people will know what we're talking about for sure.
Yep. So as you mentioned, the conference this year will be held August 9th through the 12th here in Logan, Utah. We have had a venue change this year. We have become a little bit of a victim of our own success, but that's a good thing. We used to hold the Small Satellite Conference this is the 24th year. For the first 23 years, it was held in the Eccles Auditorium on the campus of Utah State University. We are now moving about, 200 yards over to the Taggart Student Center. But it's still located on campus, much, much nicer facility. We are very, very excited to be moving in there. The old facility was good, but we just outgrew that facility. We just, once we started getting up into the 800, 900, and 1,000 type of numbers for attendees, it really started to make sense for us to start looking for locations to go. All the feedback that we have been getting throughout the years was that people liked coming to Logan. They liked the area. It's kind of a small town, and they liked having it on the campus of Utah State. So we did everything we could to keep it here, and the only location that we could really find and work out with Utah State University was the Student Center. So since the conference is held before school starts, we're able to take over essentially the entire student center, which provides a lot more square footage for the exhibits and the technical program. This year will be the first year that all of our exhibits will be able to be held indoors. They are all on the same floor as the technical sessions. So you'll walk right out from the technical sessions and all the exhibits will be right there. It's very close proximity. We're talking 10 yards from the first booth over to the technical sessions. And then we have essentially doubled our ability to have folks sit in technical sessions. We're probably pushing 800-900 people that we can fit in that auditorium, that new auditorium. And it's lovely. Some of the things we had in the past where we had some issues were obviously with air conditioning, keeping the place cool. We had some sound issues just because they were outdated. This is just going to be a whole lot more comfortable for us and I think make the conference a whole lot more enjoyable. So we are really, really excited about this move.
Of course, I really enjoyed the tents in the other locations, so I'll, in a way, miss it. But it will be probably a lot more efficient, and everything will be a lot smoother. So just for people who know the area, this is the same building where all of the food court items are downstairs, correct?
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah, so on the there's the university in there where several people stay. On the east side is where the Eccles Conference Center sat. Directly on the west side is where the student center, the Taggart Student Center, is. So it's not too far. You'll still park in the same locations. You'll just take a short walk in another direction to get there.
Terrific, and we really look forward to it. So what's the agenda like? And I do have an enormous number of students that listen to this program. So SmallSat is probably one of the best, if not the best, student-friendly conference around for college students and graduate students. So talk about some of the student programming as well.
Yep, okay. So this year, you know, we always try to pick a theme which is somewhat timely. This one probably could be timely during any years, but as you know, we're a very technical conference. It really provides companies and organizations from around the world to discuss their capabilities, the products they provide, and whatnot. And this year, what we really wanted to do was to connect those people to the thoughts and the planning processes that our visionaries and the sponsors have, where the visionaries and our sponsors are going to be able to present to the audience what their plans are for the future, how they want to use small satellites to achieve their goals for their specific organization. That will then allow the companies and organizations to go home after the conference and hopefully start thinking about how to develop products or modify their products so that they can help those customers meet their needs in the future. So it's really a connecting between the customer side of the house and the commercial side or the business side of the house where people are developing products and capabilities. We have about 20 countries represented here. Of the 1,000 attendees, which we usually get, we'll have somewhere in the order of 350 organizations. You know, these are really the experts in the field in from commercial, military, science, and academia. We'll have just over 100 exhibit spaces this year. And the nice thing is we really have room for large companies, small companies, startup companies. They are certainly all welcome to attend this. Now, in tying our theme together, kind of the way we've done it this year is we've got a keynote speaker, and our keynote speaker is Jean-Michel Cantant. And Jean-Michel is the Secretary General for the International Academy of Astronautics. They are headquartered in Paris. And he is really going to speak to the vision of IAA and how small satellites can help them to achieve their goals. Then we have a session dedicated specifically to the visionaries and the mission sponsors, where they will talk to us to define their critical needs that they have in the future. And then we also have a panel that will be essentially reacting to and discussing and talking about the things that the keynote speaker highlights as important and the dedicated sessions from the visionaries that they see as important. And that panel is, the title of that is Understanding Future Mission Needs.
Now, this is a new format.
Well, a little bit. We have had panels in the past, but we haven't really tied it together this specifically and this closely. And I think this really works well for us. Having Jean-Michel, you know, where he really has a very important role in 33 countries around the world, he will be able to bring a flavor from outside of the United States and be able to talk to some of the things that the rest of the world is doing in space in terms of non-military space exploration. Then the folks who are talking, the visionaries and the mission sponsors, that special dedicated session, several of them are from the U.S., but we also have a Korean speaker who will be talking about their needs. And then the panel will then kind of be playing off of those and trying to really pinpoint and get at some of the things that they have talked about.
Okay.
The good thing about the panel is we still have I don't know if you remember the iClickers. We were using the iClickers before, so that is an opportunity for all of our audience to get involved. There's sort of an interactive, there's a handheld voting device that everybody in the audience will have. We will raise some questions and issues, and we will have the people on the panel actually react to the different thoughts that are going on inside the audience's head.
So
that'll be kind of a good live back and forth.
So this is like the the Roman Colosseum, thumbs up or thumbs down, right?
It is.
I'm looking at your website, so these panels and the other session, these are the technical sessions 1 and 2, correct?
Let's see. The panel is actually on Tuesday.
Oh, okay, so it's not immediately after
right.
The keynote. Okay.
Right, so the keynote talk will be, well, I'll get up and I'll say a few words at 1 o'clock on Monday.
Right. And listeners, you can follow along if you want to. Their website, I should have announced it at the start of the show, is smallsat.org, and then you can go to the schedule or actually anything else you want to go to on their green and white Connect the Dots website. Why don't you continue telling us about the week, and then we'll broaden the discussion a little bit.
Right. So on Monday, right after the keynote, we have our very first session of the conference. It's called Mission Payloads, and it really talks to the different sensors that allow missions to happen, that really makes them possible. Then the second session is called Around the Corner, but it's basically upcoming launches and missions that are coming up in the next, 9 months to 18 months kind of a thing. Then that basically takes us to the end of the day. And at the end of, I think that's like 5:45, and then at 6 o'clock will be our conference opening social. And as usual, it will be held at the Space Dynamics Lab. We have a little pond out here, a nice little pond and a grassy area. It's an outside venue. It's a full dinner. We'll have drinks. We'll have live music. It really is a great opportunity to get together and do some interaction with colleagues and old friends. So that'll wrap up Monday, day one. Tuesday, then our first session, we start off with Tidbits, which talks about CubeSats and NanoSat initiatives, because, right now the whole small satellite community is really boiling and moving forward at a very rapid pace in CubeSats and NanoSats. So we wanted to make sure that we dedicated one session specifically to some of those exciting things. Then we go into our demand-side visionaries, then the panel, which will be moderated by Bob Muir. And on the panel we have, you'll know these names, Lieutenant Colonel Hoover Henderson from Air Force Operation Responsive Space Office, Joe Dizio, he's out of the NASA Explorers Program, and Chris McCormick, he's the owner of Broadreach Engineering. Then Tuesday also we have the Market in Retrospect, which is basically looking at the lessons learned from recently flown missions and whatnot. That's kind of one of those things we have every year. And then we have, that evening is when we have the industry-hosted events. And there are multiple companies who will host those events at different locations around the valley. There are parties that people are invited to come to. It is a great, great networking opportunity and a whole lot of fun. It's really a great chance to have a little bit of fun with the colleagues that you work with every day.
Do you know who the companies are that are having parties this year? Do you know if Orbital is back online with one?
Let's see. Orbital this year is not going to have a party. They wanted to, but there were some things that happened there. I believe they will be coming on in the future. We have the big SpaceX party. We have Comtech AeroAstro will be having a party. And that's pretty much it for Tuesday night.
Raytheon's not doing one this year?
Raytheon, I think, is still trying to figure it out.
And ATK?
And ATK is we're coming. We're still up in the air. We're still trying to decide.
Okay. Well,
the budgets this last couple of years have just been so tight.
Yeah, tell me about it.
With all of our companies that once used to be an absolute crazy night, which I think we'll get back to again, but this year will be a little bit smaller with a couple parties. But it still should be a great time. So please come out and enjoy those. They're a whole lot of fun.
And of course, the SpaceX party people is to die for. So it's reason enough if you ask me to go to the conference.
Yeah, that's a good one. Gwen Shotwell, who is the president of SpaceX, is a very, very dear friend of mine. And when she was trying to make the decision, I said, "Well, there is no decision. You're having a party." And so she said, "Okay." So she had a party. She's a lovely person and a very great friend of the conference, and we appreciate all she does. So anyway, they're going to have a nice party. Then on Wednesday, our first session will be spacecraft systems, and that's really talking about the systems engineering and the subsystems that go along with that. Then we have the Frank J. Redd Scholarship Competition, and I'm going to skip that, maybe come back to that later, where the students from around the world get their opportunity to present their papers. Then the next session is from Earth to Orbit, Basic Launch Opportunities, Secondary Payloads, those types of things. Then we have Mission Enabling Technologies, which is, this one is typically called the Advanced Technology section. And we have two sections. We have one on Wednesday and one on Thursday. And then before we leave that day, we then have the presentations of the awards for the Student Scholarship Competition, where we will hand out on the order of $30,000 to our students who were able to present, usually $10,000 for first place. Stan Kennedy heads up, he's the technical chair for the student competition. He's from Comtech Aero Astro. And then Gwen Shotwell, obviously the president of SpaceX, she's the person who really goes out and does all the legwork and the fundraising, and we just appreciate all they do. They basically volunteer their time. And SpaceX and Comtech Aero Astro support Stan and Gwen in their efforts. And without these volunteers like this, we just wouldn't be able to have the conference. It's just a big help for us. Then on Wednesday night, we have another conference event, which we call Go Local. It's at the new Marriott Riverwoods patio there when you just come into Logan from Salt Lake City. There'll be a nice light dinner. There'll be drinks. And the whole intent here is we want everybody to come out and spend an early evening with us, and then if they haven't had the opportunity to go out and explore Cache Valley, we want them to go out and, you know, go fishing, go for a hike, go see the valley, go to Bear Lake, do those types of things. So that was the whole intent of Wednesday. Then Thursday, our final day of the conference, is Logo Day. Basically, people wear business casual and wear a logo shirt or something that shows who they represent, the company they represent. We have another Mission Enabling Technologies, which is the Advanced Technology session. And then the second session, which is the last session of the conference, is titled The Next Generation. And really what we're doing there is highlighting the new programs that provide hands-on experience for our next generation of scientists and engineers. And this is really education at all levels. If you'll remember, we have had even some high school programs come through there and show off what they're doing, and it's just great. It really gives an opportunity, sort of a window into the different things that students can get involved in to really broaden their careers. Then we have a farewell lunch, and in terms of the basics of the Small Satellite Conference, that's when the conference ends. Thursday afternoon. So,
talk about student scholarships and the special student displays of their projects and what they did to enter the competition. You have usually about 20 aerospace schools represented, even some from Canada, if I remember.
Well, we do. We've had them all over the world. We've had Australia here. We've had South Africa. We've had people here from Japan. But the process, we actually have taken a fairly formal and rigorous process. This year is the 18th annual student competition. It's named after Frank Redd, who is the conference founder. And Frank was really interested in the education and was a huge, huge champion for not only small satellites, but he realized that small satellites were a good way to have education, the engineering, the math, the science, and things like that. But this competition, the scholarship money that we receive, is entirely funded by the small satellite community. Some people, you know, will give pledge of $100 or $50 or $25. Some people pledge $500. And then you'll see some of the companies will step up and pledge $1,000 or $5,000. All that money that we give out to those students comes from that contribution to the community. So we're tremendously, tremendously honored and humbled by the fact that people are able to help us with that.
And by the way, you need to speak up a little bit because for some reason you drifted off. But one of the other great things about the student funding listeners at SmallSat, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I hope I'm not, because this is just a plus winner for SmallSat over other conferences, is the money goes directly to the students and not the university. Correct?
We don't take a penny. We don't take a penny of that money. All of the money goes into the students for their scholarships, and nobody receives a penny other than that. All we do here at Utah State University is we have an account where we hold that money, and then we divvy it out at the appropriate times and write them a check. And yeah, we have no overhead, essentially. The overhead that is created, obviously there's a little bit of work that needs to be done. That is done by Stan Kennedy. Comtech or Astra helps with his stuff. SpaceX helps with Gwen Shotwell. And then the Space Dynamics Lab provides some support to support myself and Stephanie Halton. Who from our side here at Utah State University deal with the student competition.
Okay, and one more thing for the students that are listening. There's a lot of recruiting that goes on right on the campus, but at the conference itself. Lots of students can do interviews, and I've heard students get jobs by going there and networking. Almost everyone who's who in aerospace that has a budget to hire someone is there. So for those of you that are students, you need to go. And I think there's also a student registration price, right?
Yeah, we do have a special price for students. Matter of fact, it's $150. The full registration, if somebody wants to come and attend everything for the entire week, is $575. Student registration is $150. So you know, we try and basically minimize, and it's a simpler thing. They don't receive all of the perks that a typical professional would receive, but it is a great opportunity for students to get involved. And usually the students will be tied in closely with the university, and so their university will help them, you know, or support some of the funding that it takes to get to the conference. So we have about, and I don't know what the number is, the exact number, but of the 1,000 people we have attend, I'm in the ballpark, we probably have 150-ish students, university students, who will attend this conference. The actual student scholarship competition itself, you know, we'll have 20 or 30 papers come in, and we have a really unique set of people who score those papers. We have 7 judges who represent NASA, academia, DOD, industry, and the international community. And what those 7 judges do is they down-select to the 6 finalists. Those 6 finalists are then, those are the folks who come here and present and are really battling it out for the $30,000 in scholarship money. 75%, the way we score it is 75% of the scoring is based on the paper itself. And it's obviously small satellite related. It could be attitude control, it could be sensors, it could be structures, it could be testing, orbital dynamics, those sorts of things. But and then the other 25% is based on how they present at the conference. So we do not know the winner until we add up the scores once the students present at the conference. It is what we have called, and it's kind of a joke, but it's true, it's probably the world's greatest interview. You know, if you get an opportunity to present on stage, I've seen many, many of these kids walk off stage, and they have several job offers, usually before the day is over, the day that they'll present. Because they get a chance to, you know, everybody in the community gets a chance to see what their capabilities are, what their specific areas of interest are. And it's just a great opportunity. This Student Scholarship Competition is not just for the students, though. It really allows the students and the professors and the universities to showcase their work to a worldwide audience. We have seen professors get involved in research work with NASA and NOAA and the Air Force, and the same thing with the university, just because their student got up and talked about work that's ongoing at their university. So it's really a tremendous thing, something we're very, very proud of, and hope to continue long into the future.
We're going to take a break, but and I guess this last question before we take our break is probably a lead into the second segment of the show. But this is from George in San Diego, California, and George says, I have attended the conference in the past, and I really like it. I'm wondering, on the Monday night affair, do you still offer tours of the Space Dynamics Lab? I'm interested not so much in seeing the lab again, but you usually have students there or people associated with the lab and the current projects, and the projects change from time to time, so it gives us a good view of what's happening with the Space Dynamic Labs projects and also who you're teaming up with in terms of other universities or companies as to carry on these projects. It's like a who's who and a current listing of what's going on in aerospace engineering. So I hope you offer that tour again this year.
Yep, absolutely, we will. And if you'd like me to talk a little bit more about that when we come back from the break, I certainly can.
Yeah, and that'd probably be a good time to introduce the lab director, Neil. So everybody stay where you are. We'll take our first break, and we'll be back on air in about 3 minutes.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to the Space Show today. This is our annual SmallSat program, and we're talking to Dr. Pat Patterson and also Neil Holt, who is the new director of the Utah State Space Dynamics Lab. Pat, right at the end of the first segment, we talked about a question where they were hoping the tours to the lab were available Monday night and that you would again be displaying students and some of the current projects and relationships that the lab is working on.
Right, and so we will have, again, we will have the opening social down here at SDL. If you take kind of a broader level look at space research happening at Utah State University, the Space Dynamics Laboratory, which is, you know, probably the more well-known name, is a part of many, many things happening at Utah State University in space. We have an incredible educational track in physics, mechanical and aerospace engineering, electrical and computer engineering that happens on campus. Then we also have conferences, not just a small satellite conference, but there's also a conference called the Calibration Conference, or CalCon for short, and they do a lot of calibration of space sensors. That actually happens later on in the same month of August. It's toward the end of August. Students, we are very lucky here in that I think the number, and I'm going to get this number wrong, but you talked about that there was 340-ish people working at the Space Dynamics Lab. However, on top, those are the professionals. On top of that, we have another 75 to 100 students, which are primarily from Utah State University, which work down here, and about 75% of those 100 are in technical areas. So it's really an amazing opportunity for the students to get into their field of work that they want to get into and learn in the classroom. up at Utah State, and then they come down here and get hands-on experience. And we try as much as we can to get them involved in the tours, to make sure that they're interacting with people who come in so that they understand the environment to which they're going to be working in the future. I think it benefits not only them as a person as they go about their career in the future, but it benefits us as the Space Fanatics Lab, because we have allies that go out, and you know, we keep those allies and friends throughout the years, and it helps us stay connected to the space industry. But what we like to do is, as a side note, to the evening social here on Monday night, is we will take, and people can sign up, and we can take them through the different parts of the Space Dynamics Lab. We obviously don't have time to see all of our facilities, and all of our facilities cannot be shown for security purposes. But it still gives a good, it still gives the general, you know, engineering population a good understanding of the capabilities that we have here. Technically, kind of some of the things we do, the facilities that we have, the students, and it gives these students who are involved in those programs a chance to talk to some of our, companies who are looking to hire those folks. Another thing that we like to do is we do help, because obviously as a small company as the Space Dynamics Lab is, we are obviously not able to hire all of the students that work for us throughout the years. So we try and help as much as we can with job placement. So many, many companies, you know, Lockheed Martin's and Northrop Grumman and AeroAstro's and Broadreach Engineering, they will come to us and say, hey, are there good students who are working for you now who you will not be able to place at the Space Dynamics Lab, and if so, could you kind of point them in our direction? And we do that, and we hook them up, and we're very happy to do that, because you know, the students will put in 2 or 3 years of their college career here working with us, and we enjoy and appreciate the time that they provide support to us. We want to see them be successful in the future, and we like to hook them up with the great aerospace companies that are out there.
People can do the tours, and they will learn about it. I have a listener, Terry in Dallas, who wanted to know why there's an absence of K-12 programming, and it's totally focused on the college level.
Well, no, so that's a good point. Now we have typically high school. You will see typically high school programs, usually about one a year, talked about in one of our sessions. In the next generation session, which is the last session on Thursday, the conference is absolutely open to any educators and their students who would like to come. My guess would be that probably funding is a big issue for those types of organizations. We would love to have Seymour K-12 come. It's just a matter of, you know, can they afford to attend? Can they write papers which fit nicely and make sense to put into the conference? We just do not have a lot of those people come to the conference, except, like I say, for a few of the high schools around the country who really focus on space research.
Okay. You have the new director of the lab there with you. What exactly, the lab is really not Utah State, but it's part of Utah State?
It is, and maybe this is where I can lead in and turn things over to Neil for a little bit. But Utah State University has a research arm called USERF, Utah State University Research Foundation. Within USERF, it is essentially an umbrella holding organization for multiple research entities, of which the Space Dynamics Laboratory is one. It happens to be the biggest one as well, but it is one of those organizations which sits within there. So the Space Dynamics Laboratory is out working and you know, proposing on contracts and doing things that the typical aerospace companies do on a day-to-day basis with a whole lot of professional employees, and then in our case, a lot of student employees. Now, the Small Satellite Conference is actually run by Utah State University. It is not run by the Space Dynamics Lab. So I wear two hats. One of my hats is to work for Neil here at the Space Dynamics Laboratory to do the day-to-day job, which I need to do to get paid for SDL. But the other one is to support as a volunteer the small satellite conference in support of Utah State University. Now, the way the Utah State University Research Foundation pitches in is they help us with our budgeting. They help us, you know, in terms of writing checks and taking care of the budget and the different financial things that we have to do. And that's basically provided by them. That's what they do to support the conference. USURF and Space Dynamics Lab both believe that the conference is obviously a good thing for space at Utah State University in general. And so that is the support that we get from them, and it's incredibly helpful. You can imagine if we had to carry and be able to do all those things by ourselves, again, it would drive the cost of the conference up to some rate that would just be, you know, exorbitant. So that's a tremendous thing that we have an advantage here.
You have another quick question on logistics. This is from Bob in Las Vegas. And Bob says, I've also been to conferences in the past. They're really good. I'm thinking about going, but I recall in the past if one registered this late, they might have trouble finding Logan, Utah motel rooms. Has that situation changed any? Is it too late to register?
So yeah, that is a great question. With 1,000 people here coming to the conference and probably, if I'm just going to guess, 900-plus of those are coming from out of town and need hotel rooms. There are not enough hotel rooms in this town to take care of everybody that week. Now, there would be if it was only the conference, but obviously some of those rooms are taken up by other people visiting the valley and whatnot. We have had two very nice hotels built here in the last couple of years. One is the Marriott Riverwoods on the south end of town. That's a beautiful, beautiful new facility. And then on the north end of town here is the Hampton Inn. And that's very close to the Space Dynamics Lab. So between the two of those, we can basically cover most of our people. I believe that maybe a few people will have to go to Ogden or Brigham City, but not very many. There's also been another hotel which was just put in recently, about a year ago, the Holiday Inn Express. So for those who are trying to find a room at the last minute, probably the thing you can do is search for the Holiday Inn Express, the Marriott Riverwoods, or the Hampton Inn.
The Holiday Inn Express is in Logan now?
Yes, And by the way, if you go to our website, there is a whole list that has all of the hotels where you can find rooms here in Logan. Like you said, most of the rooms are booked very, very early on in the year. But I know there are a few rooms to still be had here in Logan if you dig a little bit.
Listeners, if you do end up staying in Brigham City, just to give you some logistics, it's about a 25 to 30 minute drive. Very easy, very, very pretty, very scenic drive. You'll actually enjoy it. And, you know, for me, I drive from where I live 30 to 40 minutes just to get into San Francisco on a daily basis. So a half an hour drive in beautiful country is actually a pleasure. So don't let that stop you. Neil, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about how you've seen Space Dynamics Lab change and evolve. You've been there, as I said in the introduction, about 20 years, and here we are in 2010 coming up on 2011. You've witnessed a lot of history and evolution, I imagine.
I have. And let me come back to that in just one second. Let me just say that we're pleased to support the Small Satellite Conference, and it's a fantastic opportunity to have a diverse industry players come to Logan, Utah, and we are grateful for the opportunity to take those people through on a tour, show them our current programs, discuss with them relevant issues and challenges in the industry, and we think this is a great opportunity for us. And we at the Space Dynamics Lab, as you're aware, part of the reason for the conference is we play strongly with small satellites, and that's part of our industry. And that's been a change that's happened over over the evolving years of Space Dynamics Lab, we've become stronger in the small satellite area. And recently we've invested even in testing certain components and aspects of small satellites. And so we invested in a small satellite test lab. I think those that stood that up called it NOVA, the NanoSat Operation Verification and Assessment Test Facility. But that's something that we will take some people through as part of the tour, if they're interested, to look at that capability to test different components of attitude control systems and as they relate to small satellites and the challenges that we have to test those effectively.
Where is the group located that you invested in? Is that at Utah State too?
No, that is here at Space Dynamics Lab. It's part of our lab. It's just a room here in the building with outfitted with specific equipment, which we will continue to enhance as the need develops there. But so as part of the tour, we can take select individuals up there and show them that capability.
Okay. How have you seen the conferences in this whole field change over the past 20 years?
Just say that again.
How would you describe the changes in the small sat industry as well as this conference and the lab over the past 20 years? Because you've been there for almost the entire program, right?
Right. My field of expertise through much of that 20 years was, although space-related, not in small satellites and not specifically with some of the satellites that you see today. Pat's probably better qualified to answer that question, how things have changed, but the growth that we're seeing with CubeSats and that technology recently has been probably the major change. Pat, do you want to comment on that?
I was going to say, David, and I know you've seen this too. In the first probably 10 to 15 years of the conference, people were getting together. They were excited about small satellites because they could get students involved. It was a way to do some low-cost research, and it was a good thing. It was a good thing for the space community. But in the last 5 to 10 years, things have changed. It's sort of the chicken and the egg thing, where in order to really fly a very capable small satellite, you have to have subsystems that are capable of providing the necessary attitude control or power systems or, you know, things like that that just or power, you know, when you're talking about efficiency of solar cells. They just weren't there, but in the last 5 to 10 years, all those pieces have started coming together. Because companies and organizations and, you know, the Air Force Research Lab and all these different research organizations around the world really have been investing in miniature technologies which really help these spacecraft become a reality. Now if you go out and you integrate some of these components together, no longer do they just have to be, very simple research-oriented type programs. They can now actually start to serve the communities that need operational programs, whether it be the military, whether it be NASA or NOAA. The capability is just quickly spiraling up to the point where, you know, we are really seeing an advancement in technologies that support small spacecraft in general. I'm talking 1,000 kilograms and smaller. And it's getting to, now will they take over the entire industry? No, I just don't believe that's going to happen. But there are definitely some missions that can be done more effectively, more costly by smaller spacecraft today because of the way the industry has pushed technology forward in the miniaturization area.
Do you, I know you guys don't fly satellites per se, but do you have any idea of how many small sats, and maybe we can include CubeSats in that, are now able to be launched on an annual basis?
Well, that's a good question. I wish I knew that off the top of my head. We actually do build small satellites here at FDL. We have not built a lot. We have built all or parts and launched 5 separate spacecraft over the years. Our first one started 15 years ago or so. So we've been in the game a little bit for a while now. in terms of the number each year, I don't know that off the top of my head, but I'm seeing, you know, like if you look at the things that, Steve Buckley and the ORS shop is doing and AFRL is doing down in Albuquerque, you know, they're trying to find a ride for, I think it's like 30 or 29 or something, small satellites to launch as a secondary payload. So, you know, the numbers are starting to move from one or two a year up to 15 to 20 a year, and there has really been a big push in the industry to basically allow and modify existing launch vehicles so that they have secondary payload capacity. And if that secondary payload capacity becomes more available, that then provides the opportunities for people to then go out, and the reasons, by the way, for people to go out and build and invest in smaller spacecraft. There really wasn't much of a reason to do that in the past. If you're going to go build a $2 million spacecraft, but it costs you $40 million to launch it, financially, that just doesn't make good business sense. Now, if you can go out and build a $1 or $2 million spacecraft, and for $500,000 or $1 million, you can get that spacecraft launched, now you're starting to get to the point where it really starts to make sense, and low-cost missions can actually really start to be achievable.
One of the things I've noticed since I've been coming to the SmallSat conference is the expansion of programs among universities that never ever had such a program or even thought about it. So one university comes to mind is University of Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. There are actually several. When we first started the student scholarship competition, I wasn't there for the first one because this is the 18th, but I bet there was on the order of 4, 5, 6 kind of universities who had programs that would allow those to those students to get involved. But now, if you want to have a satellite program or a space program at your university, it's very easy, and there are many, many opportunities for professors and their students to get involved and get onto a program so that the students not only have the academic side and learn, you know, the math and the physics side of satellites, but they also get some hands-on experience. And because the cycle with small satellites is so quick to turn around, instead of taking, you know, 4 or 5 years, they can actually start from a design, they can get something through, tested, and potentially in line to be launched within a year or two. And that's a good thing. That means the student gets to, if they start as a sophomore, by the time they graduate, they can actually see this thing get launched and get some data back and know and understand the lessons learned that they have from working on this entire thing.
So a student can actually see his or her project fly while they're still a student.
Yeah, and it's starting to get there. It's still hard to do because, as you know, this is still space. Space is not an easy thing, and there's a lot of hurdles we have to jump through, and safety and things like that. But it is getting down to the time frame that students can actually start to get to see things flown. If not when they graduate, it happens very quickly after.
This is Todd in Denver, Colorado. Is there any kind of a poster program? Is this particular conference totally closed off for new submissions? If it is, what are the dates for submitting or trying to participate with the 2011 conference? I'm a student at the University of Colorado.
We would love to have Todd get involved in it. All the other students that we can get involved. This year we are closed out. Basically, here's the simple thing. We have next year the conference will be August 8th, 11th of 2011. The abstracts for the conference are due February 8th. Now this is one of the students. I'm sorry, I'm asking a colleague of mine here.
Yeah, you're falling off on the audio again too. So speak up.
The student papers are due in March. So really the intent there was, and the reason we set that, was so that the students could come back from Christmas break and start during that next semester and work on a paper January, February, and March and turn that paper in so that they can work on it during their class time. Then they could turn turn that paper in, and then they get down selected in plenty of time for them to know whether they'll be coming out to the conference or not. But this year is totally full. You really need to be clicking by about middle of December. You need to be on board, ready to go. We'll have all of our site up. Our website will be up. All the information will be there. So December is a good time to really start ramping up and thinking about getting things in for the Small Tech Conference.
I have another logistical question, and this is from Red. That's the name, Portland, Oregon. And Red says, I'm thinking that maybe I can still go if I can get a hotel room. How do you get to Logan? Can you fly there? Is it far from Salt Lake City where I know you can fly to?
Right.
How do you suggest?
Most of the people, if they're not close, will fly into Salt Lake City, get a rental car, and it's about 90 minutes north of Salt Lake City. We're just on the other side of the Wasatch Mountains. We sit down in a little valley. So it's a pretty easy drive. And like I said, if for some reason you can't find a hotel room in Logan, there are plenty of opportunities within 25 to 30 minutes, hotels you could get a room at, undoubtedly.
Is there a registration date where if you do it before a certain date, the price is one thing, and if you miss that date, it goes up, or has that already happened?
No. So if you register on-site, the price goes up. Full registration right now, if you register right now, it is $575 for the professional. If you register on-site, it's $750. So, you basically save yourself a couple $100. Student registration is $150, and I don't know if the registration cost changed. That stays $100. So if you're a student tied in with a university or a high school or any sort of a educational program, then you'll be able to get in for $150.
Okay, and that doesn't change.
But that does not change. That will not change.
Okay.
Right. By the way, let me get back to you asked about posters.
Right.
We do not have, other than there is a set of students which come. We have several booth spaces available for different universities. So we'll have Utah State University, Texas A&M, many, many different places around the country and around the world, actually, will have their own booth. And that's probably the closest thing to a poster that I would say we have at the conference, where they'll have some nice posters, and they'll have some students out there talking about the things they're working on and their capabilities. But we do not have a poster session. We have chosen to go all technical sessions with briefings and single track as a single track conference.
Okay. I can tell you that the booths are probably the best of any conference I've ever been to. They're really incredible. So, again, listeners, that's probably reason and cause enough to be there, for sure. Do your Space Dynamic Lab students still make ice cream for the conference?
We do have a booth from Space Dynamics Lab at the conference. And we do, whether students or actually some of our senior executive likes, we will scoop ice cream one afternoon.
So they make ice cream, listeners. So,
So that's an interesting point. So we are an agricultural school. We're the Utah State Aggies. And they make that ice cream up at Utah State University.
Oh, so I always thought it was the students at the lab that are making it.
No. That ice cream is actually made by Utah State University. And so we go by, and they're just a couple blocks from the conference center. So we go by and pick up a whole bunch of buckets or get the small cups and hand them out. So
I always misunderstood that. Do they sell that ice cream in the local markets?
Absolutely. And you can buy it right there at Utah State. If there's a place right on campus where the ice cream store is, and you can go in there and get a sundae or get a gallon or as much ice cream as you can stand to eat.
I always thought the space engineers were making that. You shattered my dream there.
Well, we do some that we make as a fun thing. We make with liquid nitrogen. So we make the mixture, and then we put the liquid nitrogen in and actually freeze and turn it into ice cream. But the famous ice cream, which is the real good stuff, we leave that up to the pros up on campus.
Listeners, we're going to take our next break, be gone for about 2 minutes, and then we will be back with our final segment on today's program. The toll-free number for those of you who want to call instead of send us your email and chat questions, 1-866-687-7223. We'll be right back.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with The Space Show. Your support of The Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support The Space Show button. Your contribution will help The Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to The Space Show is tax deductible.
The mission of The Space Show is to promote future economic opportunities, scientific discoveries, and medical advances for all humankind through peaceful and cooperative ventures in outer space. The Space Show intends to be the forum by which space exploration becomes an integral part of our culture, our economy, our country, our world, and our global vision, in which all nations unite in creating a thriving future through the enormous potentials afforded by off-Earth opportunities. The Space Show is committed to advancing integrity and responsibility, both in our off-Earth conduct and in the potential long-range consequences of our actions in space. The Space Show wants to make the dreams of space today the realities of tomorrow.
Welcome back, listeners. This is our annual SmallSat discussion program, and we are joined by Dr. Pat Patterson and the new director of the Space Dynamics Lab, Neil Holt. And Neil, there's some new developments going on at the lab, and also you're flying instruments on the WISE, W-I-S-E mission. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on at the lab and what's on WISE?
We are involved in many programs, and I don't even know the exact number, but it's going to be close to 100 different programs at the same time. Some of those small and some of those large. One of the larger satellites that we have recently been a part of by building the infrared center is the Wide Field Infrared Survey Explorer, or WISE, W-I-S-E. And if you do an online search, you'll see that come up. One of the best sites if you want to learn some more information about that and actually view some fantastic imagery is a site, the Berkeley site. So it's wise.ssl.berkeley.edu. And then go to the multimedia gallery there. And they release an image probably every couple weeks on average. Everything from supernovas to, stars we've never seen before. This is an infrared sensor with four different bands. And just fantastic imagery. I'm amazed by every image that I look at that's been put together.
When your lab made that instrument, is it mostly a student-driven project, or what's the relationship to students and the actual hardware, piece of hardware?
So that was an effort that we did with NASA and with JPL and with some other, of course, satellite bus providers and whatnot. We employ, as Pat has mentioned before, many students here at Space Dynamics Lab, and I dare to venture a guess, but it's over 10 students that had a hand in that build of that satellite. We build it mostly by professionals, and when students work on a project like that that's going to space and critical for NASA, they're over. Their work is overseen by professionals, and it's a great learning opportunity for those students. But we have had, I said 10, but I think there was 10 that went all the way through the whole program, but probably 50 that had a hand in different pieces of that.
How long did it take you all to make that piece of hardware?
The overall program was about a five-year program. I think that we were actually deep in the sensor build probably for 3 years or or somewhere in that range.
So a student could actually see the project come to fruition while they're still a student?
Yes.
Okay. What are some of the other projects that that the lab is involved in that you can talk about?
Well, we've talked a little bit about the SmallSat area within Pat's division and WISE. We've talked touched on just briefly our calibration capabilities. We have a division that does calibration characteristic testing for mainly IR, but EO and IR sensors of all sizes and shapes, and not necessarily built here at Space Dynamics Lab. We are, at the Space Dynamics Laboratory, a university-affiliated research center, meaning that the government, particularly DOD, recognizes us as a national asset with expertise that they draw upon, and we calibrate many other companies' sensors here to characterize them and calibrate them, and you can see a need for that as we go towards sensors that are sensing global climate change and things, and some of those missions are asking for 10-degree resolution over a 10-year period of time, and not drifting from that. So you need to calibrate those sensors and have them very, very tightly characterized and calibrated. And then you want to make sure that the sensors that we build to sense things here in the U.S. even are calibrated to a standard that so we know that a measurement taken by one sensor built by a satellite in the U.S. and another sensor built in the U.K. all tie to one standard so that we can compare apples and apples. So that's another capability we have here. One other thing that maybe is of interest to this audience is we do some modeling, and I have a modeling tool, a new one called Sensor CAD, and this is a great capability to characterize electro-optical sensor missions and satellite as they orbit. So what they will actually see from the orbit they're put in based on the characteristics of those sensors. And it models satellites and rockets and all kinds of different things and where they're pointing, whether they're pointing at the Earth or the sky. And that's a great capability that is being released jointly with Analytical Graphics, AGI, and their STK EOIR plugin.
How accurate is that modeling to reality?
We're finding that it is very accurate. We can get you some more information if listeners are wanting to know exactly numbers. We can provide that. They can do a little search on SensorCAD and be pointed to some of those things on the web as well. But we're just AGI is about ready to release that end of July, their first release with the EOIR plugin.
Would you say the Space Dynamics Lab is growing each year? Is it difficult to sustain or, increase growth? How do you see it changing each year?
We've been very fortunate that we have been growing year to year. With every laboratory and every aerospace company, as budgets tighten and projects are cut, it is a challenge to keep that base funding and those programs alive that you're working on. But we've been fortunate to be able to do that, to grow year to year, and we look forward to continuing to do that for several years to come.
Terrific. And if a student, so your students are graduate students, right?
We employ in all different fields undergraduate and graduate students, so not necessarily graduate students only.
Okay, so the student gets accepted to Utah State and then applies to SDL, or do they apply directly to the lab? What is the mechanism for a student who wants to be associated with the Space Dynamics Lab?
Well, they contact our human resources department, and that's the short answer. The longer answer is we post on a regular basis for needs for students. And we employ students anywhere from our accounting students and logistics students to mechanical aerospace students and electrical engineers and technicians and all kinds of different fields of study. And we post those on a regular basis. So when an engineer or a project has a need, we post those, and they're posted on campus and they're posted on our website. And students can apply through that.
So basically they're already a student at Utah State, and this is in addition, correct?
Usually that is the case, yes.
Now, do they get paid? Is this like an internship?
They get paid, yes, absolutely. And we pay what we consider pretty competitive wages for students and that type of labor, especially in Cache Valley.
So they can make the big bucks by coming with you guys, right?
Well, maybe not big bucks while they're students. We work them pretty hard for the dollars they earn, but it's definitely a great experience and a resume builder.
For students who are graduating and going out into the workplace, I'm just curious, how do you assess career opportunities in the industry right now and for the next year or two? Is the industry shrinking? Is it mostly the action in DOD or DOE? I mean, or is it in the space programs? How do you assess the opportunities for graduating students?
My view, and I may be a little bit removed, but I think those who are graduating, especially in science, engineering, math, and technology areas, they are still finding work and valuable jobs and opportunities. It may or may not be directly related with space, but I think they're finding some great opportunities. The space industry, and with some of the changes in the direction and administration, has kind of been put on hold a little bit. And so some of that growth hasn't been happening, but I think I believe that is starting to happen again as we find a direction.
Well, we can only hope so as well. This is Harriet, and Harriet's in Tucson, Arizona. And Harriet says, do you have people of foreign nationality working with the lab?
Not with the Space Dynamics Lab itself. We also, besides doing work for NASA and NOAA and commercial ventures, we do a lot of work for the Department of Defense. And we are careful with our ITAR restrictions, and we don't have foreign nationals or even foreign national students at the Space Dynamics Laboratory.
If they have a green card, is that sufficient, or do they have to be U.S. citizens?
No, we require them right now at the Space Dynamics Laboratory to be U.S. citizens.
David, this is Pat. I just wanted to tag on the end of that, though. There is a, I would caveat that just a little bit. So we worked very, very closely with our professors on campus and the students who work with those professors. Obviously, at a major university like Utah State University, many, many of the people who come through are non-U.S. citizens.
Right.
So there are a lot of things that we do which are associated with the Space Dynamics Lab, which in no way are classified. It's basic research. You know, it's trying to understand new types of structures for small spacecraft, or how to build a better black body for testing, EOIR sensors, or those types of things. What we do is we get our professors and their research staff involved in helping us to solve some of those tough problems here at SDL, and those folks are then able to work with non-U.S. citizens on campus. Now, they may not have, those students may not have an office sitting here in SDL proper, but they do play a part in developing some neat things for space and providing research, and they're then able to go out and give papers and international conferences, and geophysical union papers and things. So there is a tie there. It's just in SDL proper, in the buildings where we sit, because of our tie to some very sensitive programs that we work on, we just, from a security standpoint, have to be a little careful there.
Okay. In the remaining minutes of the conference, for people who are on the fence but who can still attend the conference, what's your best pitch to get them there?
I'm going to throw two things at you. Okay.
Okay.
One is the conference is not just the conference. All right. And I'm just going to quickly go through on so the conference itself actually starts on Monday, August 9th. However, before the conference on Saturday, August 7th and Sunday, August 8th, there will be the 7th annual CubeSat Developers Workshop. That is on campus. That's in the engineering building. That is a student-run conference, and that is very, very well attended. For people all over the world will attend that workshop, and that is a great, great thing for students and professors and whatnot who want to get involved in flying CubeSats, developing CubeSats, so that they can get their students hands-on experience. Again, and that is on, if you'll go to the smallsat.org website, you can find the link to that. You can figure out how to sign up. It's very, very inexpensive. It's basically get here, and you're in pretty good shape. Then on Monday, August 9th, before the conference kicks off, there are two things happening. One is a university nanosat program, and you'll probably know that. That's the one that's led by the Air Force Research Lab and by the Air Force Office of AFOSR. Those folks have this competition between its 12 or 14 different universities, and they go through an entire build-up and design of a spacecraft, and the winner, I think it's every couple years, actually gets a free flight into space, and they get to fly that spacecraft. They will be having a meeting that morning of the conference. Then that same morning, there will be a NASA town hall meeting. And this is something that I think people are going to be interested in. This comes out of the office of the chief technologist for NASA, and they basically have several small spacecraft programs, and they're going to talk about a few things, like Franklin. There's a subsystems program, which is going to be run out of NASA Ames, program called Franklin, and it's basically trying to advance technologies that will support small spacecraft. Then there's an Edison program, which is a flight program that is intended to fly some of those things, and that will be talked about there as well. So if you're a company or you're a subsystem provider and you want to get involved in Franklin or Edison, you probably ought to be at that NASA town hall meeting, and that will be Monday morning before the conference.
Do you need to register to go, or where is it held? What are the logistics on that?
It is held on campus in the Winslow building. It's just like 100 yards from where the conference is actually going to be. I think they will want to know numbers, but you can link onto the SmallSat site and go there, and they'll tell you all of the logistics. Okay.
Okay, now you usually have some things Thursday afternoon or Friday at the end of the conference.
Right. There is one more thing on Monday morning for our students will be incredibly important. They're going to talk about student funding opportunities, new student funding opportunities, which are coming out of NASA. They have a new program, and I believe it's going to start this fall. They told me the numbers. I can't remember them, but it is many, many different it's like 100 or 300 different opportunities to fund students to do education. They're going to fund like $50,000 or $60,000 per student to get an education in the aerospace field. So if you're a student and you want to figure out how to get $50,000 to pay for your education, you might want to consider being at that town hall meeting. It is going to be a great, great opportunity for our aerospace community students out there to help get them through school. Okay. Then we have the conference Monday through Thursday. Then we'll have what we call the farewell lunch Thursday afternoon, about noon. Then as soon as that's over, there's the Operational Responsive Space Industry Day. That will be held down here at the Space Dynamics Lab. It's actually posted on FedBizOps, and it's also posted on our website. So if you want to learn more about that, you want to go to that, you want to understand what's going on, the latest and greatest of what's happening with ORS, you probably want to be at that too, and that's Thursday afternoon. Once that concludes, I think that gets over at 5 or 6 o'clock Thursday afternoon. That pretty much wraps it up, and there's the conference.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Do you give out an address? Is there a conference address if people have questions or want to know something more? How do they do that?
Best way to do is go to www.smallsat.org.
Yeah.
And you can find all the information on all the additional meetings there. We have all the links to the folks. We have all the links to the sponsors. We have, in addition to the volunteers who support the conference, and they are very, very important to us, but we have two full-time staff. One is Stephanie Houghton, and she is our conference administrator. And there's contact information, telephone, and email to get to her there. So if you really want to find out something detailed that you need to know, get a hold of Stephanie.
Okay.
We have our exhibit manager, who's new this year, Blair Moore. And same thing, if you go into the exhibits area, you'll have a telephone number and an email for Blair. You can get a hold of her and find out all the specifics on your exhibits, you know, when you need to show up, how that all works, and that sort of thing.
Can you still get room in the exhibit hall, or is that sold out too?
We are jam-packed. We are absolutely jam-packed. We have no room for any more presentations. We have no room for any more exhibits. Yeah, it's an exciting time. Even though we expanded and we have a tremendous amount of space, as compared to what we used to have, we're booked. We're fully booked.
Okay, and dress is just casual, correct? It is hot.
This is casual. Typically, you know, it'll be 90-ish degrees here. Sunny. It's very, very dry here in August. Most people walk around in a pair of slacks and a polo shirt. If they're giving a presentation, they'll throw a tie on. But it's a, you know, it's a small town. Business casual sort of an environment.
And parking, the Utah State Parking Garage, which is adjacent to where it is, is pretty good. And then you have overflow parking for the latecomers just a short walk away.
We do. So we'll have some parking. This year there's Utah State really is working hard to renovate the campus. So we've got a couple issues that we're going to have to deal with on the fly on campus in terms of parking. But we do have enough room for everybody to park. It's going to get better in the future, and we're excited about the work that they're doing. It's really going to help us as we move forward in the future, not only just with Utah State, but with the Small Satellite Conference.
Okay. What should we have talked about regarding the conference or the lab that we've forgotten, overlooked, or have not talked about?
Well, I need to, if you don't mind, I need to give a big thanks to a few different companies. For myself, I need to give a very big thanks to the Space Dynamics Lab because they let Utah State University and myself and my team put this conference on, and essentially, you know, they provide a little money to make sure that I can do my job right, but they don't provide a whole lot of oversight, and so we're able to do and make decisions that we think is best for the conference. Then there's Bob Muir, who is our technical chair. He works for ATK, and ATK has been extremely supportive of him throughout the years in being able to support this conference. Charles Swenson, who is a professor at Utah State University. Again, the folks at Utah State are just tremendous with him and allowing him to do that. And then we brought on a new person, a new associate technical chair this year, Aaron Rogers. He's at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab. And, again, JHU-APL has just been tremendous in allowing him to do the things he does, because it does take time. It's fun. We enjoy this, or we wouldn't be doing it. But it does take a little bit of support from our organizations that take care of us day to day. Otherwise, you know, we'd have to turn this over to somebody else. So.
I mean, you didn't mention it, and you know, for people who are coming there, there's a lot to do in the area of Logan. If you want to come a day or two early, or if you're able to stay a day or so late. There's the monument commemorating the golden spike of the Transcontinental Railroad.
Yep.
ATK, which is about a 30 or 40 minute drive over in Promontory, has a totally cool rocket garden. Hill Air Force Base, what, about 30 minutes south, has a fabulous air museum. I mean, really, really cool. Russian planes, Navy planes, Air Force planes. Going back to World War II, probably before World War II, there is just a whole bunch of really cool stuff. Salt Lake is there that you can do, even with your family. Of course, there's a very famous Logan stuffed grizzly bear, right, in Logan?
Yes, there is.
I've never been there, but I've heard about it. And so, you know, you can bring your family. There is lots to do, and you might even want to stay a day or so after the conference or come a day or two early just to take in some sights that you would not normally probably plan to go see or visit. And having done it myself and taken my kids there, I wholeheartedly recommend it. And it's beautiful country.
A large portion of our foreign attendees want to go up to Yellowstone. They'll go over to Bear Lake, which is just about a 50-minute drive from here, which is a spectacular place just over the hills here. There's Monument Valley, or all the Arches National Park, Zions National Park, if you like the more deserty type scenery in southern Utah. It's kind of a cool place. And we appreciate living here.
Absolutely. Neil, any concluding comments? Anything you want to say on behalf of the lab?
No, we're, again, pleased to support the Small Satellite Conference and be associated with it in supporting that. And we welcome people to Logan and look forward to seeing them at the Monday night reception.
And you're going to be there, right? You'll be available to meet people.
You bet. I look forward to meeting people.
Okay, great. Any concluding comments, Pat, on your part?
Thanks for all you do. We always appreciate the chance to get to talk with you. And, it's just something we really enjoy. And I look forward to seeing you at the conference.
Absolutely. And listeners, I want to throw in a plug for something else, because when I go to these conferences, probably some of the most important reasons I'm going is the networking and the availability to meet new people, hear new ideas, new companies. So, Pat and Neil talked about it a little bit, but we've got about a minute left on the show. I have to tell you that, first of all, the companies that are displaying in the booth, these are real companies. So these are not, bull-oriented, companies that are, financing and playing on a hope and a dream and a wish list. These guys make product. They bend metal. They have designs. They're selling them. They have customers in the government, the military, and in the commercial sector. They are real commercial, profit-oriented businesses doing real businesses. This conference is very, very unique about that. Again, this is not everything on a hope and a prayer and a wish and a dream. This is the real McCoy. Everybody is really super duper friendly. Even when you see the Air Force officers that are got so much brass and metal on their uniforms, you think they're going to fall down to their knees. Everybody is accessible. And I would just tell you that for networking and meeting and learning and experiencing, what you do outside the sessions of the conference has the potential, depending on what you want to do and your personality, to be probably the finest set of opportunities you will find at a space conference, especially one that focuses on commercial opportunities. So we talked a little bit about that, but having been there six different times, this place is really super about that. It is a reason enough to be there. Guys, I'm looking forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks, and I want to thank you both for being on the Space Show again.
Yeah, thanks a lot, David.
Thank you, David.
My pleasure. See you soon. And that's it, listeners. Sunday, come back, the final summary Space Show classroom program with Dr. Logan and Dr. Juris. Thank you all, and goodbye.